Well, thank you for a really warm welcome. Thank you, Laura and Simon. It is so wonderful to be here again. I've spent the majority of my adult life here in this community, and so it feels like daughter of the house returning home, and not usually the one preaching from my family, but thank you for welcoming my children and I today. It is wonderful to be able to share with you a bit more about the work that you support in Wise Choices for Life today. Well, not so long ago, I spent time in Uganda, and I was there in my new role as the leader of Anglican Overseas Aid, and in our transition to take over responsibility and leadership of Wise Choices for Life. And Uganda is a country that's really, I guess, heaving under the strains of overpopulation, and it is still recovering from its pretty dark days under the dictatorship of Idi Amin. So it has certainly a number of challenges. And I was there with Janice and Andrew Smith, and they are obviously incredible and key supporters of the work of Wise Choices for Life. And so I was there as they handed over relationships and introductions, and we sort of formalised our partnership with Wise Choices for Life. And so it was wonderful to travel there together to Uganda. And there's a picture of Janice and I that Andrew, I think, must have taken because you're not in the shot. Uganda, it's located on the equator, and it's in East Africa, and you might, I guess if you can visualise, it's sort of on one sort of side, there's the savannas of the east, but through to the west is lush jungles, and imagine incredible animals and glorious landscape, waterfalls that are jaw-dropping, coffee bean production for those of you who are pretty keen on your coffee, and the animals are just incredible, and the people are very, very friendly. It's home to a staggering 47 million people, and on average, people have just 5.7 years of education. So a huge population that is very sort of low in its opportunities with education. One in four women in Uganda have given birth by the time they're 18. There's a very high mortality rate amongst mothers, and most of them are teenage young women who have given birth. So we really see issues of people trapped in intergenerational poverty, that cycle of too many children and just not enough to provide for their needs. And so we see that in some of the most marginalised communities in Uganda, people simply don't have access to what we would see as fairly basic reproductive health, education, information, and also life skills education. Things like critical thinking, how to make wise decisions about your financial viability. The things that we, through our education system, really would take for granted that our children are growing up with. Because people are pretty vulnerable, and there's a lot of factors going on, we do see high rates of particularly young men turning to criminal activities and very high rates of incarceration. A lot of those reasons are to do with young men's treatment of women. So people, even with education, are struggling to find work just because of the sheer size of the population. So, as I said, I was in Uganda for the purpose of meeting with Wise Choices for Life team on the ground, and in their work as they work to improve access to education and roll out this really incredible high-quality life skills education. And they work with children through to, you know, young people and adults. They work across the whole age range. They particularly target key messengers in the community. So they target teachers, they target church pastors, and they target prison wardens. As I said, just very high rates of incarceration. So prison wardens are a very key messenger in that mix. And in turn, when people are equipped with the particular training, they then go on to roll that training out as a volunteer in their own community. So it's very replicable and can spread an impact. That circle of education continues. So it's a very smart way of working with volunteers and key messengers in existing community structures. One aspect of the work is protection and prevention. So that means trying to prevent and protect particularly young girls around early teenage pregnancy. I know I can look out and see a lot of doctors in the room. Obstetric fistula, HIV, maternal deaths, and working in places where young people are congregating, such as schools and university villages, church settings. So another aspect, as I said, relates to working in the prisons and youth remand homes. And so that's really working on that rehabilitation piece, reformation, and really helping young men shift in their thinking about treatment of women and girls and children. Now, the origins of this training, some of you know this really well, and for others it'll be newer. But the origins of this training came from the formidable Australian midwife, the late Marg Docking. She really had a very special connection that she formed between Australian communities, particularly Melbourne Australian communities and Uganda. So in any given year, we are now seeing that have grown to around 3,700 people receiving their training. And as I said, they then go on and train in their networks. And so that's a presence in 12 schools, 7 prisons, 6 men's and women's groups, and 9 churches. We're really proud as Anglican Overseas Aid, as we lead Wise Choice for Life, to have conducted the very first independent evaluation to really measure the impact. Is this work really making a difference? And we're really confident in being able to say in the communities where the intervention has been taking place that we are seeing a reduction of mortality rates and the education having a significant impact. That really helps us, of course, form a basis of achievement and then to help make future plans of the smartest ways that we can continue to plan and program, but also is a really good news message for those who are really walking that deep journey of investing in the success and the future of this work to happen in Uganda. Well, let me make this a little bit more real by sharing with you Tom's story. Tom is a beautiful smiling picture there. He is a prison officer, prison warden, and his story is really one of transformation. 20. 20 is the number of children that Tom has fathered. After 18 daughters, he reached his goal of becoming a father to a son. And then he topped it off with another one the following year. Now, as you can imagine, the poverty and economic challenges that Tom's family experience are quite challenging. And it is culturally normal to have a very large family in Uganda. The average is at least 6. So these are the cultural norms in Uganda. Tom joined the Wise Choices for Life training program back in 2021, and he has a lot to say about how it has impacted him. He's become one of the accredited trainers, and then he rolls that out as his role as a prison warden with the many young men that he works with in the prisons. He says, "We cannot change the past, but when they empower us, we can change the generation to come." And obviously in any story, there's a lot going on, and I can only sort of tell you the tip of the iceberg, but he does spend some time acknowledging his own parenting faults and how much he seeks to inform and educate others and sort of pass on this training so that people can live financially viable and healthy lives, making some wise decisions about what they really are after. And so he is very much part of that passing on the knowledge, and particularly through inmates in prison. And so he particularly calls out that decision-making side of the life skills that has been really helpful, as well as the basics around reproductive health. And he says, "I am seeking a change in my life. I'm seeing a change in my life, and the people I train. Well, Janice and Andrew and I certainly saw some of this work in prisons firsthand, and how the program, whether it's in church settings, school settings or prisons, is really making an impact in the communities on the ground. One of the places we visited was a prison, and we sat outside in a quadrangle with close to 1,000 young men getting pretty close around us, and then a smaller group who'd been part of the training performed some drama and skits and rolled out pictures of pelvises and childbirth and things that were culturally appropriate ways that the training works with people to pass on that knowledge. Because you've got to remember that people have had about 5 years of schooling, so things like drama and other visual ways are really effective ways to train. And we could really see how hungry people were for the training, how much of a difference it made. And this train-the-trainer model being very sustainable, working with volunteers to roll that out. Well, I don't know if you've ever visited a place like Uganda, a place that has overwhelming challenges of poverty. Let me tell you that it is challenging. It is a challenging as a person who comes from great privilege in Australia, and it is also challenging as a person of faith. It really confronts you with the very brokenness of our world, the deep systems of injustice that benefit some of us who are few, and impacts so many in so many complicated and different ways. I know for myself, I've been in international poverty and justice work for my entire sort of adult life, and I'm used to, in a way, the very brokenness and the pain of our hurting world, but Uganda provides new faces, new contexts, new challenges of the brokenness of our world. Well, what do we as Christians do when we are confronted with the pain and the brokenness of our world? Overwhelming needs. And I don't say this glibly, but I want you to listen as I say, we first take hold of the hope that we have as Christians. Our God, as we have heard today, is a missional God. He sent his Son to rescue and reconcile the brokenness of our world. And our passage in Deuteronomy 4 reminds us, if I read out verse 35, to you it was shown so that you would acknowledge that the Lord is God, there is no other beside him. He is a God who calls out and redeems his people. He has a purpose. He has a purpose for his people, but for all creation. And the beautiful thing is that our God invites us, he calls us to join in his mission. His mission through Jesus and into the wider world. In God's power and purpose, all that is broken through Jesus will be reconciled and restored with the coming Messiah. This is the Christian hope for the new heavens and the new earth. God's people will live in eternity with Jesus. We will have no more infant mortality deaths. We will have no more suffering, no more pain, no more poverty, no more injustice, no more decaying earth. So when we are challenged by the overwhelming needs in a place like Uganda, we must have hope that God is making all things right. And that passage from Deuteronomy does speak to our great and powerful God restoring his people to himself, establishing God's kingdom on earth. So if we turn to the New Testament passage and the passage from Luke, we really see Jesus teaching and launching his kingdom mission, his kingdom manifesto. And when Jesus stood up to read in his hometown of Nazareth, it was a very familiar passage to those who were gathered. But it was much more unexpected, much a larger vision than perhaps what they were setting. It was setting a stage for something much bigger than imagined, because God's kingdom has far-reaching consequences beyond often what we expect. Luke 4:16, I'll read it again. So Jesus comes to Nazareth. He'd been brought up. He went to the synagogue on the Sabbath, as was his custom. He stood up to read from the scroll from the prophet Isaiah that was given to him. And he unrolls the scroll, finds the place where it's written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor." So this is a reference to Isaiah 61. It is a key text about the compassionate ministry of the Messiah, a very special concern for the poor. "He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." Now, this release is referencing a Jubilee from Leviticus 25. Under the law of Moses, every 50th year in God's wisdom was a system of rest and reset, of dealing with underlying causes of inequality in the society, that slaves would go free, debts were cancelled, the animals would rest, the land would rest and reset in God's wisdom. Now, Jesus brought good news to the poor, and to the outsider, to the marginalised. And Luke goes on to explain and show us how Jesus' kingdom mission has social implications. It's a key part of God's kingdom, because Jesus' healing ministry was very much focused on the poor, those in need of healing, those in need of acceptance, the marginalised. And the passage continues. He rolled up the scroll. He went back and he sat down. And the eyes of everyone were upon him. "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Today. The thing I love about that phrase is it reminds me that Jesus is at work in our world today. We can take heart that the Spirit is moving, and Jesus works through the Spirit, through the church, for his kingdom purposes today. And that we, the church, are invited to play our part. It's a kingdom where his people live outside of often the cultural norms around them, in an upside-down kingdom. It doesn't often make sense to the world around us. It's a kingdom where we serve the poor, where we seek justice, where we are agents of God's reconciliation, and we seek release and reset for all creation. Because Jesus showed us that another way is possible, that God's reign was breaking in through every dimension. And so that reconciling work of Jesus on the cross, it is good news for all. It is good news for all creation, and it is good news for people in poverty. And it is now that God's kingdom is taking shape. As I said, now is working through the Holy Spirit and through his church, and that is us. Well, friends, we can live in a bit of a tension as we try and work out how we are to play that part. On one hand, we can lurch to trying to fix the brokenness of our world all in our own power, and trying to rush around and do it all in our sort of earthly way of seeing things, and actually leave no room for God in his heavenly power to work. Yet on the other hand, we can see the brokenness of our world and be a bit indifferent and do nothing and just expect for God to do it all. And N.T. Wright reminds us that neither is really a proper vision of Christian hope. The kingdom of God has been launched. And he reminds us that the way it happens is through our service to one another, through our service to the poor. It's not that we are trying to create utopia here, but there is stuff we can do. And in love, we respond with loving action. And God is inviting us to play the part in those kingdom purposes. Well, maybe you're wondering, how can you begin to move in action? How can you begin to think about what does it look like to be an agent of sort of God's love or reconciliation? Let me ask you to consider these questions. Where are you tuning in to the cries of those in need? Where is God stirring your heart as you hear accounts such as those of Uganda here today? What are you noticing? Are you letting God prompt you and move in you? Tune in and take some time to notice and be able to listen and move by those cries. I've got a really helpful way for you to think about how you can play your part. Because I'm a big believer that we can just feel overwhelmed and stuck and then not do anything. But actually, many steps in the right direction starts to be a new pattern of being. It starts to begin a movement of transformation. And that's what we as disciples are called to do. We are faithfully following Jesus in the many repeated faithful steps. A friend and mentor of mine, Ruth Valerio, she is a really popular Christian author based in the UK, and she does a lot of books around sort of how can we actually translate things into our genuine lives, our lifestyles. And she talks about think of the world like the word gap, between the world as it is and the world as it could be. I want you to remember that word gap. It stands for G-A-P, give, act and pray. So how can you stand in the gap? Where are you being called? So can you give? Many of you are incredibly faithful and generous in responding in this way. For some of you, this might be an easier response. And I encourage you, do not stop there. Continue to grapple with Jesus' radical call to generosity. There are so many passages about Jesus' call of how we relate to money and how we can use money to bless others. So I encourage you to continue to generously give, because that is how the work of Wise Choices for Life and the broader work of Anglican Overseas Aid and your other missional partners takes place. So G, is there a way that you can give? A, is there an action? Now, many of you know from my certainly long years at Tear Fund of the advocacy and lifestyle campaigns and other ways we can join our voices together to really work on some of those systemic issues, working with Tim Costello and others to really challenge injustice at deeper levels. And we can have a powerful voice together. We can look at our own lifestyles and how we spend our time and our talents. Wise Choices for Life would not have taken place without people volunteering in the Australian community, their time and their technical knowledge. The training program is the result of medical people like Janice and Andrew and others who have brought together their knowledge into a really engaging learning style and training package. You might be able to use your time and volunteering to turn your next fun physical challenge. I often tease Andrew about, you know, men in Lycra and sailing and all sorts of things, but turn your next mountain climb or fun run into a way to share the message of work like this and fundraise through your peers. Maybe you've got a significant birthday coming up or a wedding. How can you bless others and get others in your network sharing? So there's always ways to volunteer and give of your time and your talents as an action. And it might be that an action for you is just to simply learn a bit more about a situation like that in Uganda. So is there an action? G, A, and P, what is your prayer? Prayer must not be overlooked as we confront these enormous challenges of the brokenness of our world, to discern the part we might play, but also to invite the Spirit to work in power, to bring healing and restoration in this world. So I encourage you to think of one next action that you can take this week, maybe clarify it over a cup of coffee afterwards, of what is it that you can do to give, act, pray, stand in the gap in the coming week in response as a next step. Well, friends, as we consider these things individually, let's remember the story of us and together what we have achieved, what we have done when we join up our efforts for impact. It's really the story of God's people working together and living out that kingdom call to be compassionate and involved global citizens. Wise Choices for Life began out of Marg Docking's heart for the people of Uganda and the overpopulation and high fertility rates that were keeping people trapped in poverty. And she and her husband John visited Uganda in 2009, and she came back and worked and developed up training. And then in 2011, it was launched as Wise Choices for Life. And she worked tirelessly on that and brought a community of volunteers and fellow people around her. And then since her passing in 2021 and the partnership with Anglican Overseas Aid was formed, we have continued to grow in new ways to serve the people of Uganda. And it makes sense that Anglican Overseas Aid would come into the story in this way, because that is so central to who we are as an agency and as a community of Anglican people together. When the then Archbishop David Penman founded what we now call Anglican Overseas Aid more than 30 years ago, it was with that real heart and connection and relationships that he had with people internationally, wanting to connect Melbourne Anglican communities to respond together. That really built on personal relationships. And so we did. And from the early days of responding to the HIV pandemic, to the Rwandan genocide, to terrible tragedies that have reared their head yet again in Gaza, Myanmar, local tsunamis and other natural disasters in our Pacific neighbourhood, we have worked together and we have sought to respond, and to respond with the very best of our abilities. And that impact, thankfully, has grown so that we are seeing Anglican communities in different parts of Australia really catch this mission and get behind what it is that we can do together. And so we are. We are trying to play our part in God's kingdom and to take faithful steps. And so we do that when we connect globally. We build deep relationships with partners, and we bring our respective strengths and our skills for quality, I guess, faith-led development. We respond with that commitment to the poor, to the image of the church as light in the world, and how we can partner in that faith-led development around the world. We do so by being theologically informed and very solutions-orientated, knowing that our local partners know the context best of the work that they do, but we can bring in our strengths and our compliance and our navigation of Australian systems and create the most impact together. Because we are all compelled by God's mandate and love for the dignity of all people. It is deep in our history as an agency to have a particular concern for women who are overwhelmingly impacted by poverty. And so, like in Uganda, as we have alerted by Wise Choices for Life to what is happening on the ground, we hear the cries and the ideas and solutions from our partners on the ground, and we work out the part that we can play. And together, we, being all of us, are working for God's renewed creation, free of poverty. We are taking up Jesus' words and seeking God's kingdom on earth. As the church, in the power of the Spirit, and we are doing so today. Let me close in prayer.